You'll turn to Ecclesiastes. So Ecclesiastes is one of those books that is hard. It's hard to go through, not just like teaching wise. It's hard to study through as well. One of those reasons is primarily because it's wisdom literature. And who else? Who knows what the other? There's other books that have some wisdom here and there, but like specifically, what are the other books that are considered wisdom literature in the Bible? Proverbs is one of them. Yep. What else? We got Ecclesiastes, Proverbs, Song of Solomon. It's a lot of poetry. There's a lot of wisdom there as well. Psalms has a lot of wisdom in it, though that's also a lot of poetry and prayer, right? There's songs to God. The wisdom literature of the Bible, and I'll give you an example on the screen, but like Proverbs, right? Proverbs, like you'll read a proverb, and especially from chapters 10 to the end of the book of Proverbs, like it'll have these like small little verses that they're independent almost from one another, and they're just like these quick sayings. I'm not quoting one, but to give you an example of what one would sound like, it would be like, you know, the righteous man gains friends because of his honesty, but like the wicked man, you know, gains enemies because of his deception. Something like that, right? That's how they would go. Now, one of the problems that the author of Ecclesiastes is wrestling through throughout the book is that you can read that proverb, but in reality, is that how the world generally works? What do you guys think? Is that how the world works? How does the world generally work? How does the world work? Is it fair? Is the world fair? Does the world look like how God intended it to look? Do bad things happen to innocent people? Yeah. You could be the most honest person. You could be such a kind person, but that doesn't mean that you will do well in this life. That's the sad part. Because of sin. Because of having a fallen world. So then why does the Proverbs say stuff like that? The Proverbs teach us how God desires us to live in spite of a fallen world. The Proverbs hold these general truths. Like this is generally true, and especially when God is operating in a situation, this is what will happen. But when things are, not that God's ever outside of a circumstance, but sometimes God allows things to play out, and sometimes that doesn't always go in favor of the person who's in the right. Ecclesiastes, that's kind of really what the book is about, is this author, which there's some debate, but for this series that we're going to study through, we're going to consider Solomon the author. We're going to consider Solomon also the koaleth, or the teacher. So you have the author you see these two different like people. Again, we're going to say it's both Solomon. You have in the prologue and the epilogue, there's two different people. You have that person writing the beginning and the end, and then you have this person in the middle, and that is the teacher, the koaleth. Really, the teacher is not a great word, and I'll give you a definition on the board. Really, assembler is a better word for a translation for koaleth, but the date for this book is no later than 930 BC. The purpose of the book is to search for meaning and value, and I didn't, first I had in the world, but that's not all that he's getting at. He's talking about, why are we here? Why are humans on earth, and why is the like life we experience on earth so futile all the time? Why don't things operate how they should operate? Why, what Francis Schaeffer would say, Francis Schaeffer talking about the world we live in, we have never experienced a normal world. Do y'all know this? We have never experienced normality. Outside of God, of course, but specifically in a fallen world, there is no normality. God himself is the normality. And what God intended for us to live in before the fall was normal. We don't ever experience that yet. We will in eternity, but we have not experienced normality in that sense. So we live in an abnormal world. And then the topics that the author will and the teacher will tackle is time. It's going to talk about time, how it's like this endless march that nobody can control, that you know, we will die, but the earth will continue, the sun will keep rising, the rivers keep flowing. Labor, man's labor is hard, toilsome, and you know what? Sometimes you can work your butt off and there's no reward. Sometimes you can work your butt off and you don't get any fruit from it. Death, every man dies. Death is common amongst animals and people. And then for chance, he'll talk about at near the end, not that again, now one thing we'll keep into perspective here is that Ecclesiastes is not, it's not going to be like, you know, we're studying like Proverbs and almost everything in there is like, you need to do this, you need to do this, you need to do this. And it does have warnings saying don't do this. But primarily most of Ecclesiastes is coming from the perspective of an apostate person. Okay? Y'all remember what apostasy is, an apostate person is? This is a person who is forsaken God. So Solomon, he started out well. God gave him a lot of wisdom, but then he eventually apostatized. He married a ton of wives, had over 700 wives, right? A lot of concubines. He was led astray to worship other gods. And so there was a period of Solomon's life, a huge chunk, and this is what he's going to describe in the whole book, this chunk of his life where he was against God. Instead of viewing life from the perspective of God being loving and caring and kind and personal and operating in this world, he viewed God as a deistic God who was distant and far and didn't really care about humanity. And this is him trying to cope with life and the stuff that you encounter in life, the bad things, the good things. He's trying to make sense of the world without God. That's really what he's doing. That's what the book of Ecclesiastes says. So our job then, as we're studying, as we're listening, is to, in one sense, do the opposite, to think the opposite in different ways. There will be some things that Solomon will say in this period that'll be right. We'll be like, yeah, that's true. But there will be other things that he'll come to conclusions of that aren't true. And we'll recognize that as it's not true. This is something we need to be doing the opposite of. So wisdom, one thing to keep in context, wisdom here, under the sun is a phrase you're going to see a lot here in the book of Ecclesiastes. Over 30 times it's used. Really the meaning is it's explaining the world from a fallen perspective. And then above the sun is not a phrase you're going to see, but it's just a phrase that a commentator used. I really thought it was good to explain a biblical perspective. Above the sun would be explaining the world from a redeemed perspective. So above the sun is where God is. We want to view things from his perspective, not from our earthly perspective. That would be under the sun. So that's something we need to keep in mind. And I'll remind us probably this every week, just because, again, it gets confusing. The book gets confusing because you're reading it and you're like, well, wait a second, that doesn't seem orthodox. Like that perspective, that conclusion doesn't seem quite right. And you would be right. It's not. Koheleth, here's your definition, right? Teacher, preacher. I think a better translation is assembler. It has to do with gathering an assembly together to teach them something. Hevel or Hebel, this is also another word, like the video said, you hear it over 30 times in the book. This is, the definition on the board, it can mean vanity, breath, vapor, futility, emptiness. One definition I didn't put up there that I think would be also good to keep in mind is it can mean temporary. It can mean temporary. Because something can be valuable and yet temporary at the same time, right? So we got to keep that in mind. Things can be temporary. A lot of things are vanity, though. They're empty. Some things are valueless. Some things are valuable, but they're temporary. You can't grab them. You can't hold on to them. So here's an example for you guys from like the Proverbs. So you have the merciful man does himself good, but the cruel man does himself harm. That's 11:17. 14:1, the wise woman builds her house, but the foolish tears it down with her own hands. 15:15, all the days of the afflicted are bad, but the cheerful heart has a continual feast. See, like going down the list, this. If this is true, this is true. It's like cause and effect. But then you get to Ecclesiastes, and it's just not that way. In much wisdom, there is much grief, and increasing knowledge results in the increasing pain. You're like, okay, well, wait a second. That seems to contradict Proverbs. Well, no, because he's talking about earthly wisdom there. He's not talking about godly wisdom. The wise man can see things that the fool cannot, but the wise man and the fool both die. This is true. And this makes the pursuit of wisdom seem pointless. See, this is one of the examples that's where we would say that's false. And he recognizes that at the end of the book. But again, keep in mind, we are reading a person who is pushing against God. He has pushed God away. He's trying to view things from his own human perspective and explain things. So here's your outline. We're going to go through a little introduction. We're going to go through monotony observed. So Solomon is going to see the world, and he's going to be like, man, everything's so monotonous. Like, everything just continues as it is, and it never changes. And the only thing that changes is that we die, and everything still exists and continues to do what it always did. Monotony in nature, and then the monotony of man. I'll give you a second to write those down. Introduction, monotony observed, monotony in nature, monotony of man. Monotony, real quick. What is monotony? Anybody know? Monotony. I know that's, I used that word and I was expecting y'all to know what that is, but you may not know what that is. What is monotony? Anybody want to explain what monotony is? Monotony, it's an unchanging process. It's a cycle. The sun rises, the sun sets. The sun rises, the sun sets. The sun rises, the sun sets. Sun rises, the sun sets. That's monotony. Everything is the same. It doesn't change. There's no variation. All right, so let's get the introduction. Starting in verse 1. The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities. All is vanity. I'm going to read all the way to verse 11 from here. What advantage does man have in all his work, which he has done under the sun? A generation goes and a generation comes, but the earth remains forever. Also the sun rises and the sun sets, and the hastening to its place rises there again. Blowing towards the south, then turning towards the north, the wind continues swirling around. And it's on its circular course, the wind returns. All the rivers flow into the sea, yet the sea is not full. To the place where the rivers flow, there they flow again. All things are wearisome. Man is not able to tell it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. That which has been is which will be, and that which has been done is that which will be done. So there is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which one might say, see, this is new? Already it has existed for ages, which was before us. There is no remembrance of early things, and also of the later things which will occur. There will be for them no remembrance among those who will come later still. Human beings struggle with monotony. This is true across the board. We struggle with it. It gets tiring. Think of the factory worker who all day, every day, they put a little plastic arm on a plastic toy. We got more nowadays, it's more robots. But in the past, that's how it was. Or a person who, a piece of food comes by and they stamp it with a stamp with the logo of the business, right? And that's what they do every day. Stamp, next one, stamp, next one, stamp. And it's just monotonous. And it makes you go home and then you get tired. You don't want to wake back up and go to that job again, right? What does our Mondays look like? Or let's say Sundays, right? What does our Sundays look like? We wake up, we get dressed, we brush our teeth, we do our hair, we go to church, we go home, maybe we come back for youth, and then what does the next Sunday for the next year look like? Every Sunday in the next year, well, it looks the same. We do the same thing, boom, boom, every week's the same thing. Our Mondays, what do those look like for those who have a job? You're waking up, you're getting ready, you're going into work, you're working all day, you're coming home, maybe you're watching some TV, you go to sleep, guess what you do the next Monday? Okay, you're going to do the same thing. You're probably going to do the same thing Tuesday. Probably going to do most of the same things Wednesday. We do a lot of the same things. And it gets tiring after a while. Does anybody ever experience that where you're like, man, I just wish something would shake up. Like something new would happen. Like you get tired of doing the same stuff, learning the same things, hearing the same stuff. Does anybody have a phrase their parents tell them all the time? Does anybody have a phrase their parents tell them? Like you ever get in trouble and your parent says the same thing to you every time? Yeah, what does your parent say?
They either say, go to your room, or they say, you don't
get
dinner.
You don't, okay. So yeah, you have, yeah, go to your room. That's a common one, right? I'm thinking more like, does anybody have a parent who just has this saying they say all the time? Does anybody have a saying like that?
Be here, create to be, he'll set the world on fire.
Your parent says that all the time?
Every day.
Really? Okay. So when I was younger, my dad would do this really annoying thing sometimes where, like, he would just walk into my room and he would start screaming at the top of his lungs and he would be singing, "This is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it." And I did not wake up joyful when he did that, right? Like, and he did it and it'd get tiring after a while. Like, things like that. Like, you know, you encounter things, and whether it's somebody says the same phrase every day, you know, it's like, you know, like, there's a phrase that it has to do with, like, you know, like what's the phrase? Call me, but don't, like, call me late for dinner kind of thing. Like, y'all know that phrase? Like, does anybody know what I'm talking about? The older people, y'all know that phrase, right? Did I say it right? What's the right way of saying that? Okay. So I say that to Maddie sometimes, and she's just like, why do you say that? Like, and I just think it's funny. But things get annoying after a while. The more you do it, the less funny it becomes. There was this cool little story. I was reading this story. It's called The Little Prince. I don't know if anybody's heard of it. But there's this little section where there's this little boy who, he like lives on this asteroid, and he has this rose he takes care of. Kind of weird. But he takes care of this rose, and he gets tired of the rose. He doesn't, it's like monotonous. Like he doesn't really want to, like, he wants to leave the asteroid and go adventuring and do all this stuff. So he leaves, and he goes to this planet, and he finds this fox. And he starts talking to this fox, and they're talking, and this fox was kind of like just saying, hey, like, you know, if you want a friend, you should tame me, and we can be friends. And he was like, what does tame mean? And the fox keeps talking. He says, yeah, if you tame me, we can be friends, though. And he's like, what does tame mean? And the fox doesn't answer him. Finally, the fox is like, okay. To tame me would to be like for us to become like unified. Like I'm now like your friend for life kind of thing. And then this is what the fox says to him. My life is very monotonous. I hunt chickens. Men hunt me. All the chickens are just alike. And all the men are just alike. And in consequence, I'm a little bored. But if you tame me, it will be as if the sun came to shine on my life. I shall know the sound of a step that will be different from all the others. Other steps send me hurrying back underneath the ground. Yours will call me like music, out of my burrow. And then look, see the grain fields down yonder? I do not eat bread. Wheat is of no use to me. Wheat fields have nothing to say to me, and that is sad. But you have hair that is the color of gold. Think how wonderful that will be when you have tamed me. The grain, which is also golden, will bring me back to the thought of you. And I shall love to listen to the wind in the wheat. I thought that was really cool. I thought that was, it's more of a poem than a story. But the idea is this, right? Human beings have trouble with monotony. But there is a sense in which we were made to enjoy it. God intended us to enjoy monotony. Why do I say that? Well, there's a really good quote by this guy. His name is G.K. Chesterton. This is really good. I love this quote. He says this, "A child kicks his legs rhythmically through excess, not absence of life. Because children have abounding vitality, because they are in spirit fierce and free, therefore they want things repeated and unchanged. They always say, 'Do it again.' And the grown-up person does it again until he is nearly dead. For grown-up people are not strong enough to exult in monotony. But perhaps God is strong enough to exult in monotony. It is possible that God says every morning, 'Do it again to the sun.' And every evening, 'Do it again to the moon.' It may not be automatic necessity that makes all daisies alike. It may be that God makes every daisy separately, but has never gotten tired of making them. It may be that he has the eternal appetite of infancy, for we have sinned and grown old, and our Father is younger than we." Our Father is younger than we. I believe that God delights in the monotony that he does. And I believe that we were made to delight in it, but because of sin, it has now become tiresome. God desires to bring us back to a perspective, his perspective of life, where we can enjoy things, even the monotonous things, because we enjoy him supremely. Because our perspective's on him. It's not on ourselves. It's not on our appetites. It's on him. But when it comes to vanity, there are things that are vain. Real quick, let's turn to Luke. Jesus is going to give a parable of a man who in vain, he worked all his life. In vain he worked and he stored up all this stuff. This parable is called the parable of the rich fool. So Luke 12, 13, starting 13 and 21. I'll go ahead and read it. Someone in the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the family inheritance with me." So this is kind of funny. So Jesus, like, he's talking about how God cares for people. He's like, he's talking to this whole crowd of people. And this one dude is like, raises his hand in the middle of the crowd, interrupts Jesus. And he's like, "Jesus, tell this guy to give me my money. Like, I want my inheritance. Tell him to give me my inheritance." It's completely deviating from what Jesus is trying to teach them. He's like, "Don't worry, don't fear. You're more valuable than sparrows. God's going to take care of you." And here's this guy not even listening. He's like, "Jesus, just tell him to give me my money." And he says this, "But he said to him, 'Man, who appointed me a judge or arbiter over you?' Then he said to them, 'Beware, be on your guard against every form of greed, for not even when one has an abundance does life consist of his possessions.' And he told them a parable saying, 'Land of a rich man was very productive. And he began reasoning to himself, saying, What shall I do since I have no place to store my crops? And then he said, This is what I will do. I will tear down my barns and build larger ones. And there I will store my grain and my goods. And I will say to my soul, Soul, you have many goods laid up for you many years to come. Take your ease, drink, eat, drink, and be merry.' But God said to him, 'You fool, this very night your soul is required of you. And now who will own what you have prepared? So is the man who stores up his treasure for himself and is not rich towards God.'" This rich fool spent all his life gathering, producing, storing up his riches. And at the time when he thinks he's finally going to be satisfied with it, he's going to enjoy it, his life is taken like that. Should a person who works really hard be able to like enjoy the stuff that he's done, like enjoy the crops he's planted, to enjoy the work, the labor? Yeah, generally, yeah, he should. But that's not how it always works. And in this man's case, he was greedy. He was gluttonous for money, gluttonous for possessions, gluttonous for his crops. He wasn't willing to share or give it away. He wanted to store it in larger barns. God took his life that day. Vanity. It's all vanity, right? That guy's life was vanity. He worked, he toiled, and then guess what he got for it? Nothing. He didn't get anything. He wasted all his time. And you know what? Now that stuff is going to go to someone who didn't work for it. Someone who didn't earn it. It's just going to go to somebody. And who knows if they'll respect the guy's wishes or respect what he wanted to do with it or even give thanks to the guy for all the work that he did. So everything is vanity. It's vanity. Before we go to that next one, one thing I want to point back out is when it says there in verse 1 or verse 2, everything is like vanity upon vanity, that's a superlative. That means like it's like saying it's the most vain anything can get. Like it's so completely empty. It's just complete nothingness. That's a superlative. It's like the most grand thing. It's like the Holy of Holies, the place in the temple that was like the holiest place called the Holy of Holies was a superlative added to that so that we would know it's not just holy, it's supremely holy. This is what the author's doing. Everything is vanity, supreme vanity. So point two, monotony observed. Verse 3, go back to Ecclesiastes. Verse 3, "What advantage does man have in all his work, which he does under the sun? A generation goes and generation comes, but the earth remains forever." This is what William Shakespeare said. "Life but a walking shadow, a poor player that struts and frets his hour upon the stage and then is heard no more. It is a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing." Life for man outside of God is filled with nothingness. Like, have y'all ever talked to anybody, like, maybe it's even like shared the gospel with somebody? Like, you're talking to them, like, "What do you believe?" And they start telling you, like, "I'm an atheist," or "I'm agnostic," or whatever. And you start asking them, "Well, like, why do you think you exist? What's your purpose in life?" And they're like, "Well, I guess it's to make my own purpose. I guess I need to make purpose. I have a purpose." And I know for me, like, I've encountered people that have been such a sorry, they've been in such a sorry state, like such a sorry state. They're just so driven to despair because they can't answer that question. Why am I here? Why does all this exist? Right? This is called like existentialism, right? Everybody struggles with this, especially those outside of Christ. It's like, why are we here? Why is this this way? Why does this happen? Why does this bad thing happen to me? I haven't done anything. Then you start to get driven to despair. Because when you don't have an answer for these questions, it does drive you to despair. And if there is no God, like the atheist worldview says, then everything is completely meaningless. There is nothing, there's no rhyme or reason to things. Like, and who's to say it's wrong to do wrong things, right? Because if there is no God, then there is no moral standard, then we can do whatever we want, right? So eat, drink, and be merry, and then die. That's the hedonistic worldview. That's the, man, just do the best you can to please yourself, and then whatever that takes, do it. It doesn't matter if it hurts anybody. That's your goal in life. That would be the hedonistic goal. That's the goal outside of God. That would be that the view under the sun. What advantage does a man have at all his work? He works and he labors, and he'll get into this actually later. Man, he does all this stuff just like the rich fool, and then boom, he's dead. Doesn't get to enjoy it. All that, man, he thought he was going to retire, and he's going to retire in Savannah, Georgia, and have a nice little beach on or house on the beach. It'd be cool to own your own beach and have a house on that, but own your own house on the beach and then just collect seashells. And man, he was going to have a collection. He was going to enter into contests and win all kinds of prizes, right? Like, people dream about all this stuff. They dream about vacations, and they dream about taking time off, and they dream about retirement. And then guess what? All of a sudden, they have a heart attack and they never get to do it. They never get to do it. I had some friends growing up who their dad was a godly guy, Christian family. And he worked at this like office. I don't remember exactly what he did. Something with computers. And he like was in his 50s, you know, like it wasn't, I wouldn't say he was in the best shape, but he wasn't terrible shape. And he just one day, our family got a call saying that he had a heart attack and died at his office. He was just walking down the hall, collapsed, died. Left like 10 kids behind. That's the temporality of life. That's the you're not promised tomorrow stuff. That's what leads people, especially if you don't have God helping you understand these things, that can lead you into fear, despair, despondency. You'd be scared to walk outside of your house. You don't know if a meteor is going to hit you, right? You have lack of like purpose, you know, so that you don't have any drive to do anything. You become a couch potato. But you know, like you can watch all the TV you can want, you can listen to all the music you want, but there will never be a point where that fully satisfies you. I think we all have experienced that. Like, we indulge in certain things. When you're craving chocolate, right? And you're like, oh man, I really wish I had chocolate. And my favorite chocolate is the Hershey's eggs that have the like sugar coating on the outside. You know what I'm talking about? Y'all know those eggs? Those are the best ones. And I love those chocolates. And I could eat a ton of those. I could eat the whole bag. But at first I'm like, oh, I could eat the whole bag and it's going to be great. I'm going to feel so good afterwards. And then when I eat the whole bag, I feel terrible. And I wish I didn't do that. But at first I thought it was going to satisfy me. I was fully convinced it was going to satisfy me. And then I get into it and I'm like, actually, I could not eat anymore. I thought I could eat forever, but I could not eat anymore. It now has hurt my stomach. That's the futility of life. That's the vanity of life. Something good, it doesn't actually satisfy the way you thought it would. It's like grabbing wind or grabbing a vapor. It doesn't actually have any value to it. Then he goes on. Hey, generations go, generations come, but the earth remains the same. This is also vanity, right? Man, all of us, we can do all the work we can. We could go dig wells in Africa. We could all stop using oil and cars and all kinds of stuff if that would, you know, whatever you want to say, like the talking points you see with activists. Like, you could do all these things. You could have all the plans in the world to change the world however you want to. But at the end of the day, you're going to die. And you know what? If you did change anything, someone's going to change it right back. It's meaningless. It's futile. All the work you do, it's just not gonna work. It's not gonna happen, and you're not gonna be remembered for it. The earth is gonna keep going. Plants are gonna keep growing. People are gonna keep dying. The sun's gonna keep rising. The river's gonna keep flowing. You know what? That's it. That's how it is. That's your life. You don't make as big of an impact as you think you do. Monotony in nature, point 3, starting in verse 5. Also the sun rises, the sun sets, and hastening to its place, it rises there again, blowing towards the south and then turning towards the north. The wind continues swirling along in its circular course. The wind returns. All the rivers flow into the sea, and yet the sea is not full. To the place where the rivers flow, they flow again. You have three examples here, right? You have the sun, you have the wind, and then you have rivers. Sun, wind, and rivers. The sun rises, the sun sets. You can't change it. I can tell the sun, hey, stop rising. Guess what it's going to do the next day? It is going to rise. I can tell the wind, hey, blow that direction. I'm hot over here. I need the wind to come here. Well, what is the wind going to do? The wind's uncontrollable. It's going to do whatever it wants to do. It has its own mind. It's going to go wherever it wants, whenever it wants, and no one can tell where it's coming from or where it's going to go next. It's uncontrollable. That's a crucial part of the human life, is that we don't control anything. The things that we think we have control of are very small. The primary thing you have control of in your life, complete control of, is how you react to stuff. How you react to things. How you choose to act on something. That's something you have control of. But when it comes to the wind and the sun, you don't have control of those things. You have the rivers flowing into the sea, right? This idea it's talking about is this constant flowing, right? Y'all know the rivers flow into the sea, but you ever notice the sea doesn't get any like fuller? Well, and we all know why, right? We can talk about science and how vapors evaporate and go into the clouds, and then it moves onto the land, and then the earth soaks it up, and it goes back into the rivers, and then it goes back into the sea, right? It's just this cycle of things that happen. But the idea is that you can keep seeking things. Things can keep flowing into you, but they won't ever fill you. They won't ever satisfy you. Just how nature is never satisfied, the ocean is never satisfied with what the rivers give it, so also our hearts are never satisfied with what the world gives us. We can look in all the places we want. Man, we can have our whole lives planned out. We can be like, man, okay, so what I want to do right now is I want to graduate, and then I can't wait to move out of my parents' house because there's no more rules, right? I can have my own rules, and I can buy whatever I want, and I can do whatever I want. I can stay out as late as I want, right? And you graduate, and then you get into college, or you're a young adult, and you have your own house, and then now you're like, oh, wait a second, I have to have a job. And now you're like, okay, so I'm going to get a really good job. And then when you get in your job, you're like, okay, now I'm going to get a raise. And then you're like, oh, well, I can't get a raise, so I need to find another job. Okay, well, I'm going to find another job. And then you're like, okay, now I want to start a family. Oh, well, I need to buy a house first. So I'm going to buy a house. Okay, well, oh, man, this house isn't great. Maybe I'll get a better one next, like, in a couple years or whatever. But this will do, because then I get married. Okay, and then, okay. The marriage will be really good. Oh, wait. Okay, so I also want kids. Okay, so now I'm going to have kids. Oh, now we need a bigger house, and we'll get a bigger house. I would love to have a mansion, but I guess we'll have to settle for this. I need a better car. I need a better this. I need a better that. And it keeps going. And it never ends. You're never satisfied. Your life is never satisfied. You want better and bigger and more and different and change, and our hearts are never satisfied. There will never be a point where you're full. You can have all the plans you want, but just like the sea is never full, we're never full. Romans 8, 20, 23, this is Paul talking, for the creation was subjected to futility. This is the word hevel. This is the word hevel. I believe Paul has read Ecclesiastes, man. He's using it now to explain the fall. That when the fall happened, creation was brought into subjection to futility. Not willing, but because of God who subjected it in hope. That the creation itself will also be set free from the bondage of decay into the glorious freedom of God's children. For we know that the whole creation groans and suffers together until now. Not only this, but we ourselves also have the first fruits of the Spirit grown inwardly as we eagerly await our adoption, the redemption of our bodies. The earth creation, because of the fall, was brought into the same subjection we were brought into, vanity. Never being satisfied, never being filled, groaning under the pains of sin. This is something God desires to deliver creation from, desires to deliver us from. This is the whole reason Jesus came, right? Like, he came to save us from sin, but then he came to save us to be children of God, to have a better status than even Adam and Eve would have had in the garden before the fall. We're adopted as children of God. We get to experience God and delight in him and have a relationship with him, something that the world can't offer us. And then we get to the monotony of man, point 4, verse 8. All things are wearisome. Man is not able to tell it. The eye is never satisfied with seeing. The ear is never filled with hearing. That which has been is that which will be, and that which has been done is that which will be done. So there is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything new of which one might say, see, this is new? Already it has existed for ages, which was before us. There's no remembrance of early things. Also of the later things which will occur, there will be for them no remembrance among those who will come later. This is the idea. Has anybody ever, like, you ever sit down and watch a TV show you just really loved? What's like a TV show y'all have really liked? What's a really good one? You just loved it so much you wished it continued on. What's one y'all have watched? Hey, don't be ashamed. I'm not going to judge unless it's like something like really, really bad you shouldn't be watching. What's something? Y'all, I know y'all watch TV. Come on, give me something. What's a good series that you've watched? The Series of Unfortunate Events? Is that the Netflix one? Yeah. Did you wish there were more episodes at the end?
Yeah, I watched it like 3 times.
Yeah. Yeah, you wish there was more episodes at the end, right? Maddie and I watched this show called Silos. Great show on Apple TV. It was super good, and I wish that there were more episodes. Right? What about the Marvel? Well, maybe some of y'all don't like the Marvel movies. But what's a movie series? Like, I really like Batman movies, okay? I don't think I've ever watched a Batman movie I don't like. So I really wish they just keep making a bunch of Batman movies. Yeah.
The Spider-Man movies, at first I didn't like it, but I think my brother got me into
it. Okay, the Spider-Man movies are good too. Like, you can think of these movies you really like, or these TV shows, or what about like a play? Anybody like plays here? Raise your hand if you like plays. I like plays. Plays, anybody? Musicals? I really like musicals. Musicals, yes. Okay, so a musical that you really like Hamilton. I like Hamilton. Everybody like Hamilton? Okay. So you're like, man, I just wish that was such a longer musical. I wish there was more songs in it. Our eyes are never satisfied. Our ears are never satisfied. We always want more. More, more, more. Something the Proverbs would say about, the Proverbs would talk about things that always cry more. One of them is fire. Fire always wants more wood. Fire always is asking for more. A leech always wants more blood. It's always asking for more. Same thing with like a tick. You ever get a tick on your head? Anybody ever got a tick on their head and you didn't know it was there for months, and then finally you like scratch up here and you're like, wow, that's really big. And then you like pluck it off. You ever had that? That happened to me one time. Maybe it's because I got a lot of hair. I don't know. But it was there for a long time, and I remember I just ripped it off, and it hurt like crap, and it was really big too, full of blood, and it would have just kept sitting there eating on me. It just kept wanting more. It's never satisfied. It's never satisfied, just how we're never satisfied. Nature and humankind are a lot alike in this way. We want more for our eyes, we want more for our ears, and really it's we want more for our heart. But you know what? There's never enough. And even the things that we think will be remembered, the things we think are new and exciting, and that's change, or maybe that's variable, those things don't exist. Because things that we have now, like the general idea has always existed. It looks a little different. The package is a little different. But the general ideas of things have always existed. Cell phones, right? That's different than writing on paper. But guess what both of them are? Communication, right? Like these ideas have always just been around. They just look different. There's nothing really just new. There's nothing that's actually different. Something new that we've never seen or experienced. Humankind has experienced things in the past. It's the same stuff we experience now. People had enemies in the past. We can have sometimes enemies now in the present. People have had best friends in the past. We can have best friends now. People, there were family units then. There are family units now. People had jobs then. People have jobs now. People hunted then. People hunt now. People played games like Death Pack then. We play it now, right? And I won 2 games. So that's pretty good. But there's nothing new, right? There's nothing new. It's all the same stuff, and we get tired of it because we can't stand monotony. We always want change. Things that God wants us to change is the fact that He wants us to delight in Him, and then when we delight in Him, that allows us to delight in other things, even things that are monotonous. Talking about vanity and how it came about, right? We're going to read Genesis. You don't have to turn there, but Genesis 3, 16, 19. This is where vanity came in. It's because of sin. To the woman, He said, I will greatly increase your labor pains, vanity,
With pain, you will give birth to children. You will want to control your husband, but he will dominate you. But to Adam he said, because you have obeyed your wife and ate from the tree from which I've commanded you, you must not eat from it. The ground is cursed because of you. Painful toil you will eat of all of it, all the days of your life. It'll produce thorns and thistles for you, vanity. But you will eat grain of the field. By the sweat of your brow, vanity, you will eat food until you return to the ground. For out of it you were taken, for you are dust, and to dust you shall return. Because of us, because of Adam and Eve, we experience vanity. This is clear. The earth experiences it because of us. We experience it because of us. We needed redemption. We needed someone to come and bring us true life. This is something Jesus did. John 10, 7 and 10. So Jesus said to them, I tell you the solemn truth. I am the door for the sheep. All who came before me were thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not listen to them. I am the door. If anyone enters through me, he will be saved and will come in and go out and find pasture. The thief comes to only kill and steal, or steal and kill and destroy. I have come that you may have life and have it abundantly. Jesus didn't just come that we could have a good life. He came to give you true life, real life, abundant life. This is life that is outside the scope of this Solomon that is talking. Like this wisdom we're going to see Solomon have, man, he experienced everything you can. We're going to see it in the book. He had a lot of women. He had a lot of money. He had a lot of property. He experienced a lot of different kinds of foods and drinks. Like he did everything, games, anything you could think of, musicians, art. Like he got to have kings as friends, like all kinds of stuff. He experienced anything and everything you could experience, and he still came away with saying, Hevel. It's all Hevel. It's all Hevel. Because we weren't made for those things to satisfy us. We were made to have a relationship with God. One of the confessions of our faith asks this question: what is man's chief aim? The answer to this question is to glorify God and enjoy Him forever. To glorify God and enjoy Him forever. This is what man was made for. He wasn't made to be satisfied with having a wife or a husband. He wasn't made to be satisfied with children or having a house or having a car. He wasn't made to be satisfied having tons of property or going on vacation. Like those things weren't made to satisfy you. Those are gifts of God. And when they're rightly viewed, they can be really great things. But if you elevate them over God, you make them little gods, they no longer are going to act as God intended them to. They're going to let you down. They're going to destroy you. God intended you to be satisfied in Him and in Him alone. Him alone. Him plus nothing. Only Him. And when you're satisfied in God, that's when you can rightly see things. That's when you can actually enjoy things as they should be responsibly. That's when you can like watch the series of unfortunate events and be like, yeah, that was good. That was good. You know, maybe I wish there was a little bit more, but you know what? That was good. I like that. You know, or like you go to the Marvel movies, you're like, you know, yeah, they ended that story well. You know, that was cool. End of the series. You know what? I look forward to the next one, but cool. I'm content with that. When you're satisfied in God, you're content with everything else. When you're satisfied with God, your life is content. And when you're content, it's enjoyable. Your life is enjoyable, but enjoyment, joy will not come when you're not content in God. 1 Corinthians 1, 24, 25. But to those who are called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ is the power of God and the wisdom of God. Key here, wisdom of God. For the foolishness of God is wiser than human wisdom, and the weakness of God is stronger than human strength. Living for God, living things God's way, living life God's way doesn't make sense to the world. It won't, and it can't. Jesus Himself is the wisdom of God. That's the wisdom we want. We are going to learn from Ecclesiastes. We're going to learn a lot of things we shouldn't do. We're going to learn a lot of conclusions that we just won't quite come to because we have a view of who God is. And in this moment, Solomon doesn't, but thank the Lord, at the end of the book, Solomon will come back and he'll be like, you know what, overall, at the end of my life, he said, this is all that matters, to fear God and to obey His commands. That's all that matters in this life. That's what you were made for. That's what matters. But he has to build up to it. He's building up to it. He's telling his testimony. Here's the application. Perspective matters. Have a perspective of God, not of man. We're going to view life circumstances, sorrow, joy, all the little details of your life, you're going to view them through the lens of what God says is good, what God says is true, what God says is wise. You need a perspective change. Two, enjoy good things. Once you're content in God, that allows you to enjoy things. That allows you to enjoy even the smallest of things, the flowers, the sunset, walking in a field, taking a nice walk through the park, like greeting a friend, having a conversation with a friend, sipping a nice hot cup of coffee on a deck, right? Like all these things that seem really small and whatever, like those are great and glorious gifts God's given us to enjoy on this earth. But unless you're like satisfied in God, you're going to keep looking for the world, the things the world can give you for satisfaction, when God's given us plenty of great things to enjoy, but we first need to enjoy Him. And then three, savor God. Savor Him. Savor God. Remember that God is the one who satisfies your heart. When you're tempted to look at things you shouldn't, to do things you shouldn't because you think, this will satisfy me, you need to remind yourself that is a lie. That is a lie. That won't satisfy you. That Chick-fil-A milkshake back there will not satisfy Emmett, right? Like, it's not going to. Only Jesus can do that. You need to savor Jesus. He's good. He's glorious. He's abundant in life. And He tells you to partake in Him daily. And you can do that. You do it in prayer. You do it in the Word. You do it through praising Him in song. All right, let's pray. Lord, thank You for the night. Thank You for Your goodness. Keep Your Word in our hearts that we won't sin against You. Change our perspective. Give us true life in Your name, and let it be joyful. In Jesus' name.